All right, we're back. We're wrapping it up today. The deepest dive into Eyes Wide Shut you could ever want, and it's coming your way. We already talked, you know, part one and two, we talked about the movie. We walked through the whole movie. Then we went into supporter bonus territory. We talked about Dream Novella, the book from which Eyes Wide Shut is based upon. Then in part four, we started our journey into a massive book called The Making of Eyes Wide Shut. And we did part one, and we concluded with talk about how Kubrick almost showed us a spirit cooking event at the Gnostic orgy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I wouldn't believe it if you told me it to this day. And of course, in the book, they don't make any mention of it. They don't know how to connect those dots like you and I do. Now, today we're going to continue and complete our journey through this massive book. And I'm just going to go through my notes like we did on part one. And we're going to have a great time. And you're going to learn a lot. And I'm going to tell you a lot. And we're going to take that. And what are we going to do with it? We're going to fight with our families at get-togethers and Thanksgiving. And talk to them about how the lizards rule the world. And they don't even know it. They don't even know it. But who cares, right? We got each other. All right, let's get into it. Oh, and before I forget, thank you for your support. Rockfin, Patreon, the VIP section, wherever you're at. I appreciate your support. I don't want you to ever forget it. And that's why I'm doing all these bonus episodes, because I know that this isn't for the faint of heart. I know this is only for the hardcores. This is for the people that want to know all the crazy stuff. And you can go tell your friends. They don't know. They have no clue. What, they listen to Alex Jones? Alex Jones ain't going to tell them this stuff. He don't know. All these truthers out there buried into politics, chasing their tail. What a waste of time, right? It's a waste of time. It's a distraction. We get into the meat here, right? Like cutting open a spirit cooking body. We're eating the meat here. I don't know. Bad analogy. My bad. Okay, you know what I'm saying though. This is bonus stuff, and it's only for my supporters as my way of saying thank you. I appreciate you. All right, let's go. So where we're at in the book here, they're talking about writing the script for Eyes Wide Shut, and it is revealed that, you know, Kubrick is working on AI with old Steven Spielberg. If you heard the show I did about Spielberg back in, was it the summer of 2020? I did a Patreon bonus show. It's on the VIP section too. And I think it's actually on Rockfin, because on Rockfin I uploaded some of the biggest hitters of bonus content. I did a whole show on Spielberg and his very strange connections to, well, you know, all the things, right? All the kid stuff. In fact, I'm writing Use Your Illusion 2. And the first film I will review in that book, the first chapter is complete. It is on E.T., Spielberg's film about the alien intelligence. Some people say that it's disguised as a pedo type movie. About a 900-year-old alien falling in love with a 10-year-old boy. Anyhow, Kubrick was working with Spielberg on AI, which is, again, like a transhuman movie about a young boy. And the nickname for the developing script, it is revealed, was Pinocchio. Which, obviously, there's parallels to the two tales, Pinocchio and AI. Curious name though, right? And if you follow the latest in your QAnon drama news, they hate the Tom Hanks, you know. They think the Tom Hanks is doing all the stuff. And I've always questioned it. I don't know if that's true. The evidence seems a little flimsy to me, but hey, whatever. What do I know? I'm not going to defend Hollywood types. I don't know. Tom Hanks though, he seems like such a good guy. Can't be, can it? I don't know. If I ever meet him, I'll let you know. I'll ask him about it. I'll say, hey, where can I go get the pizza with the walnut sauce on the napkin with the handkerchief? And if he gives me the secrets, I will gladly relay them. Anyhow, Pinocchio is actually being made into a live-action movie with Tom Hanks as Geppetto. Pedo. Geppetto, right? Get it? The old man is the pedo, the Geppetto. So just, again, another strange coincidence here that Kubrick had so many of these, I don't know, ties with this kind of stuff. And I pray and hope that he wasn't participating or endorsing or promoting this to the other Illuminati buddies. That's my hope. That's my wish. Now, like I say, choose your own reality. I always choose my own reality. And my reality, no, Kubrick was revealing the truth to the masses prophetically. I'm going to read you about, this is talking about this actor from Yugoslavia who was in Batman Begins, right? Remember, we talked about that already. He plays Malik in the film Eyes Wide Shut. Nightingale, the Jew, becomes Nightingale, the jazz pianist. The tough-looking concierge with sly, inflamed eyes, wishing to keep on good terms with the police, is transformed into Alan Cummings' camp, gay hotel clerk who hits on Bill. The costume shop owned by Mr. Gibbsler in Tromnovel becomes Malik, a German variant of Molik. Oh, wait a minute. Stop the press, everybody. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. Malik, like Moloch, right? Remember that? We got the Moloch connection here with the bull, the sacrificial god through which they sacrifice the human beings to. My goodness. And if you recall in, since I'm freestyling here, if you recall during A Clockwork Orange, they went to the Moloko bar, the milk bar, which I always found curious that Moloko, right? Moloko. Is there something to be had there? I don't know. Interesting, though. It just hit me when I was reading it. All right, let's keep going. A German variant of Moloch, Malik, an unflattering nickname for middle-high German Malik, troublesome, difficult to get on with. The Slavic And this book, by the way, The Making of Eyes Wide Shut, is written at a very, 12th grade level, so not easy to read. Whatever this word means. The Slavic patronymic also had the benefit of fitting the person who was eventually cast for the role. The Yugoslav actor, Raid Sherbedjia, at the orgy, when, you guys probably think I'm stupid, huh? I can't pronounce words. In my defense, I bet most people can't pronounce these words. At the orgy, when Friedelin is challenged to remove his mask, he does so only on condition that everybody else does, too. A successful duelist, he states, "If my appearance here has offended any of the gentlemen present, I am ready to give satisfaction in the usual manner." Bill is much more passive and fearfully leaves the orgy at the prompting of the woman who redeems him. When Bill visits the morgue, we see him bend over the dead Mandy, Amanda Kern, as if to kiss her, but then straightens up and steps back of his own volition. No external force motivates him from this inexplicable impulse, as in Schnitzler, where Dr. Adler interrupts Friedelin to ask him what he thinks he's doing. And of course, the crucial sequence with Ziegler, knocking a few balls around and putting Bill firmly in his place, is not to be found in Tromnovel. So, I guess like a few ideas dropped out of this passage. Well, now we got the Moloch thing. But we also, and this kind of co-opts the idea I presented, that Bill and Friedelin aren't exactly the same when you go from the novel to the movie. In Kubrick's movie, Bill is, he's kind of a cuck, right? He's kind of a weak ass. Whereas in the book, he's at the orgy house and they're like, "Would you kindly remove your mask?" And he's like, "Nah, bitch, you remove yours too." Right? Now, how does that fit into the Illuminati? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. It's just something interesting that fell out of the research here. And also interesting that the final sequence, not to be found in the novel. You know, the pool table scene where Ziegler tells him, like, basically, "Hey, we've been watching you. You need to vow silence yourself right now." Here's another pretty long passage. And this is, we're going to get into a little bit of sexy time, a little bit of making union with the divine, the Apollonian ritual stuff here. Because these guys that wrote this book, like I said, they went hard in the paint on Eyes Wide Shut too. Okay. He comments on the orgy, "Should the ball be a masked ball?" Maintains the parallelisms when Schnitzler writes, 16 to 20 people masked and dressed as monks and nuns were walking up and down. Kubrick asks, is this a meeting of some religious sect? Schnitzler comments on the incomprehensible woman who at this very moment was paying for his safety. And Kubrick notes, he assumes sex. Kubrick adds, quote, a joke planned, prepared, and even rehearsed for such an occasion when some bold outsider should be caught intruding? Thus, one of the more extraordinary books that Kubrick read in preparation for the film was Cult and Occult, 1985, by Peter Brooksmith, a collection of the odd and bizarre, and whose chapter on sex, sin, and sacrament particularly interested him. Kubrick spoke about his religious beliefs, or lack thereof, only tangentially. He famously talked about the God concept in his 1968 Playboy interview about 2001. What his actual religious belief was, if indeed it existed at all, he kept to himself. So what drew his attention in Cult and Occult may seem a bit unusual. For example, he underlined, quote, regarding sexual activity as an authentic sacrament, the outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual grace. Such a sacramental use of sexual intercourse can supposedly be employed as a means of acquiring occult power, and at its highest, lead to the ultimate goal of the mystic, union with the divine. There is more, and it gets increasingly strange. The Emperor Barbarossa held young boys against his stomach and genitals to transfer their energy. What? Yeah, that's right. Kubrick read this book, Cult and Occult, underlined some passages talking about sex and the mystical occult value of it. So there we go. Proof that the Gnostic orgy scene is an occult type thing by the secret society. Facts. These are all facts. No more speculating. This is what really happened. And then even more disturbing, he underlined a passage about young boys being used sexually for these ritualistic elements. I think he was trying to reveal an insidious plot of adrenochrome to the masses. I don't want to sound like a QAnon guy, but man, I mean, there's so many examples of this weirdo child adrenochrome stuff. It's really hard to ignore. Now, of course, you're probably wondering if I secured a copy of Francis King's Cult and Occult from 1985, and the answer is no. I looked it up on Amazon. It's like $500 for a copy. I tried to scour to find a PDF on, you know, the more legal type websites. Could not find it. But I am curious about that passage about Emperor Barbarossa. Point is, Kubrick was in fact studying all these things that we have conspiracy theorized about. It's no more left to speculation. This is what this movie is about. It's about the occult. It's about the secret society elites that practice these occult things. Worse yet, it's about messing with kids sometimes, which ties us into all these other ideas we talked about with, like, Lolita, right? All right, now let's talk about how they decided who was going to be chosen for the role. And he said, you know what? We're going with the second greatest actor of all time, Tom Cruise. Let me read you. At one point, he was considering Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger, as well as Bruce Willis and Demi Moore. Eventually, Kubrick settled upon Tom Cruise and later Nicole Kidman, who had previously worked with Cruise on the film Far and Away. Kubrick admired Cruise's work, because it's great, especially his performance in Born on the 4th of July, a classic movie, and compared Cruise to Jack Nicholson. He didn't need anything. He was ready to act the part. Nothing else needed doing. His eyes were right, his mouth was right, except for that tooth in the middle of his face. And it's the same thing with Tom. According to Variety, which announced their signing on December 17th, 1995, Cruise and Kidman have said that they would not work together again unless the project was an interesting love story. Sources said Kidman and Cruise flipped over the script and were anxious to work with Kubrick. He's a filmmaking god, Cruise said in a television interview. Cruise was so excited to work with Kubrick that he was willing to remove himself from Hollywood at the height of his career when he was earning $20 million per movie, take a massive pay cut. While we don't know the exact amount Kubrick paid him, it was a fraction of that sum, move himself and his family to England, and put himself through a rigorous working day that was 12 to 16 hours long developing, it is said, an ulcer in the course of his work. We knew from the beginning that level of commitment needed, Cruise said. We felt honored to work with Kubrick. We were going to do what it took to do this picture, whatever time, because I felt, and Nicole did too, that this was going to be a really special time for us. We knew it would be difficult, but I would have absolutely have kicked myself if I hadn't done this. So, I mean, all of you Tom Cruise haters out there, join me. Join my bandwagon. He gave you an ulcer. I'm sorry, he gave himself an ulcer to give us this great movie. What a guy. What a guy. They talk about... Oh, okay, there's this... okay, remember how we talked about Kubrick, how he wasn't really in the Sonata Cafe? It says here, amateur analysts of the film are convinced that Kubrick plays a customer in the Sonata Cafe, but a close look as well as testimony from the Kubrick family and collaborators disproves this. And I put that image on the Instagram. You can see that it is not Kubrick. I mean, it looks similar, right? Like, it's in the ballpark, but it doesn't quite look like him. There is a section on how, because as you recall, in the novella, rainbow costumes is not a thing. Doesn't exist. There's a costume shop. It ain't called Rainbow. And here in the book, it confirms it. It says, even the name of the shop, Rainbow, presented a challenge. Production designer Les Tompkins recalls that great care was taken about names for the various shops that appear in the film. The production sent names to the Warner Brothers lawyers to check whether there might be a conflict with the actual places of building of business. So, point proven here that he chose Rainbow, which we talked about all the occult connections with Rainbow. This was done on purpose. This wasn't, you know, haphazardly chosen. Interesting part about the visual details of the film we're going to talk about here. They used photographs from New York City to recreate the sets in London. I mean, they took it down to the details of the windows, and I don't need to read you this whole passage. And the same goes for the orgy scene. He was actually studying many different kinds of panties. He had to find the perfect panty. I think Kubrick was a perv. He was a perv on some levels, and that's okay. We're all a little perverted, right? It's one of the two great mysteries of life, right? Sex and death. Okay, let me read you about choosing the artwork here. To further personalize the space... Oh, this is interesting because his wife, Christiane, painted some of those paintings at the Harford residence. Okay. He had paintings by Christiane placed on the walls. Since Alice Harford was at one time the manager of an art gallery, the lavishness of the art on the Harford's wall was quite justified. Surely there was another reason. Some guy said, I have to ask myself why. The only time in one of his films, Eyes Wide Shut, was filled to the brim with paintings by Christiane and her daughter, Katharina. Every wall is covered with one of Christiane's paintings, which had not been in a single one of his movies before. It was kind of a statement deep down. I think he was tired, very tired. So, I mean, I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. But that's the explanation for all the paintings. The orgy scene. This is, you know, this is what everyone cares about. This is the most interesting part of the movie. They looked at a couple filming locations before they settled on Mentmore, the Rothschild-owned mansion. And let's see here. I'll just read to you. Many key sequences were shot on location. Somerton, the palatial pile where the orgy takes place, was an amalgam of the interiors and exteriors of several different sites. Highclere Castle in Hampshire, used for Downton Abbey, devised by Julian Fellowes, who played a bit part in Barry Lyndon. Elvedine Hall in Norfolk, subsequently used by Ridley Scott as a location for his 2017 film All the Money in the World, and meant more towers in Buckinghamshire, which had been featured in Terry Gilliam's Brazil, and would be the location of Wayne Manor in Batman Begins. Kubrick did his characteristic research, considering such locations in the U.S. as Newport, Rhode Island, and even William Randolph Hearst Castle. Which, by the way, William Randolph Hearst Castle was the one... They do a lot of stuff there. But Lady Gaga's video, where she's the fallen angel, takes place there. Right? Buckinghamshire is the location where... Oh, man. Is it... I'm starting... My brain's getting mushy from Eyes Wide Shut information. It's either the place where the Venetian masks are, or it's where Aleister Crowley was from. That's where the masks were from. That's right. I think Royal Spa Leamington is where Crowley was from. Anyhow, all very curious, right? Let's see here. What else do you want to hear about? I got so many notes here. Jack Nicholson reports how Kubrick told him, in movies, you don't try and photograph the reality. You try and photograph the photograph of the reality. Terrible Jack Nicholson voice for you. But I just thought that was an interesting quote. Isn't that an interesting idea? An interesting perspective. You don't try to photograph the reality. You try and photograph the photograph of the reality. What he's talking about is levels of abstraction. You abstract to a higher level, a higher consciousness, a higher level of dimension, is essentially what he's saying. Because these artists, they understand there's something outside of this material realm. There's a higher level of abstraction out there. And they have to kind of tune into this stuff. That's why they get so wacky. That's why they always have like muses and all this stuff. And they're channeling energy and talking to spirits and all this wackiness. Because they live in a world where they're closer to that sort of understanding. That's why they're always like on this enlightened woke trip stuff. Another interesting quote. He told Matthew Modine while filming Full Metal Jacket. Kubrick did. He said, real is good, interesting is better. These are all classic golden quotes here to take with you. We talked about pillars, if you remember. At the beginning of the film, they show Alice in the light between two pillars, and we see Dr. Bill Harford in the dark between two pillars. All plays on the alchemical reconciliation of opposites, the union of opposites. In the book, they talk about this. It says, others represent ideas for costumes of the orgy, but the most interesting are the fantastical pornographic images that would have portrayed Alice's dream. Two represent a series of pillars. So I think in my notes here, I don't understand why I pulled that out, but in the notes here, I wonder if there's a phallic element to these pillars, kind of like the obelisk. The obelisk is the giant phallus. There's a masculine element to that. Okay, and then interesting, I'm not going to read you the whole passage, but interesting idea here. They had Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise actually like live in the set. They slept in the bed together. They left their real clothes on the floor. They actually were like putting their real change on the dresser. They actually shot for the window blinds. They wore some of their own clothes, bras, their own wedding rings, glasses, earrings. And then it says here, between shoots, Kidman would wear her bathrobe and curlers. By the end, Cruz says, we felt as if we lived on that set. And then a curious thing that Kubrick did, he would make Tom Cruise leave when he was filming the sex scenes with Nicole Kidman. And then do the same thing with Nicole Kidman. He would make her leave the set when he was filming like the sex scenes with Tom Cruise. Kidman wasn't allowed, she wasn't allowed anywhere near the orgy scene. And what he was doing, and the book describes this in better detail, was creating a sense of jealousy and curiosity about what exactly was happening with the other spouse. Isn't that curious? So... But yeah, he was like doing a little mental trickery with these two to try to like pull out some elements of their performance. Let's see. In the part of the orgy scene, he talks about the orgy scene a lot here. The dancers practice sun salutations and other real but stylized movements. Again, sort of based on reality on some levels. For those parts that hadn't yet been scored, Kubrick turned to British composer Jocelyn Pook. She's the one that made the Gnostic Mass song, right? He discovered her by chance in 1997 when choreographer Yoland Snaith was rehearsing the masked ball orgy scene while using Pook's composition called, quote, Backwards Priests from her album Flood as a reference track. Its title derives from the use of chants of two Romanian priests, which are then run backwards over sustained organ and strings. Kubrick had no ideas about the music, particularly for the orgy scene. He told Pook to take the idea of sexy music and run with it. She began work on sketches, and Kubrick was very open to exploring different avenues, new ideas, and approaches. She tried out all sorts of different music with the scene, eventually composing a piece called Dionysus, which Kubrick didn't think was quite right. Not wanting her to work to go to waste, she put it on the next album instead. He kept coming back to Backwards Priest after the long period of exploring other ideas. So in the end, Pook restructured it as Masked Ball, and he shot the scene to that music. As he was scoring it, she explained, "My imagination had a very vivid picture of what was happening in this scene. Stanley told me what was happening and had a very strong idea of exactly what was going to happen. Blase, blase, blah." So there you go. That's the making of the Backwards Priest. It is, in fact, a inverted form of Romanian Orthodox priests. So again, very true to the Gnostic nature of inverting the Christian message, this time literally. And sound plays an important role in our world, to the occult, to the Christians, everyone. God created the world through the Logos, through the Word, the spoken Word. And I talked a lot about this in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic with the rappers and how that all manifests itself. Let's see. And then they talk about all the things and the what the do's. Okay, so Malik's daughter whispers almost inaudibly to Bill, "You should have a cloak lined with ermine." The suggested vaginal connotations of which are clear. Is it, though? It's also a quiet reference to the fur coat that Fridolin wears in Tromnovel, but which here is replaced with an overcoat not dissimilar to Humber Humbert's in Lolita. So that ermine fur... Okay, the fur... The fur is the vaginal reference. The ermine fur is what the Fridolin character, Dr. Bill in Dream Novella Plit, wears. A guy who's actually is a bit more into trying to actually score than Bill is in the movie. So, like, is Malik's daughter trolling Bill because, like, he can't quite pull this trigger? She's like, "You should have some vagina with this cloak, with this analogy of the cloak line with ermine." Maybe. Just another idea to, like, kind of, like, put some of the thoughts we've had and question it. Could it be? I don't know. Because originally we talked about the royalty only wore the ermine. Remember that? Okay. Let's keep it moving. Bill is first summoned to the apartment of Marianne Nathanson, whose father has just died. In response to the telephone call, he says, "I have to go show my face," which uncannily predicts what will occur at the conclusion of the orgy. Okay, we talked about that already. We already covered that. The curiosities there. I think I covered that in the film analysis. As Bill walked the streets, passing the Nipped in the Bud florist shop, where a couple is necking, he imagines the liaison between Alice and the naval officer, which Alice was at pains to stress never happened. He pictures a strong, handsome young man in a white dress uniform. This character is a key change from Tromnovel, which mentions only an extremely handsome youth. It's possible that Kubrick is continuing his counterpoint with Bill's sexuality, given that the Navy is associated with homosexuality. How you like that, Navy guys? You can say that to anyone in the Navy and, you know, just hope they're not a Navy SEAL, I guess, right? But my dad was in the Navy, by the way. And I chose the Air Force because I wasn't about that action of the Army and the Marines. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, the Navy's got this sort of, you know, and that's how the military branches work. They all sort of shit on each other. And that's unfortunately what the Navy got stuck with about, you know, that, you ever heard that joke where they say that, the Navy's where 100 men go out to sea and 50 couples come back, you know, and look, it's not okay. We shouldn't be putting down the homosexual nature of things, but that's, you know, I'm just reporting on the culture of things. All right. Now, they don't know in the book why Kubrick had the officer become a naval officer, because, again, it wasn't in the book. They suggest it could be a homosexual angle, because you got Tom Cruise, which had all these gay allegations. I stick by the idea that it was L. Ron Hubbard, because Kubrick's daughter was in the Church of Scientology, right? Okay, when he's in the prostitute Domino's room, they're looking at, there's a textbook introducing sociology whose placement had led to much internet speculation. Although we know from pre-production documents, it's because Domino was envisaged as a student of sociology at New York University. So there you hear why they, what that purpose of that book was. But I don't think these guys had a very heavy conspiratorial mind. There's a lot more to be said for that book. In Kubrick's Code, I referenced Tim Kreider's analysis on this whole thing, and he asserts that it has more to do with the idea of prostitution than it does anything else. So, again, tying into the sex themes of Eyes Wide Shut. Oh, and here's an interesting one. There's actually some connections we can make with Nick Nightingale being a Freemason. I mean, he is the one that is sort of initiated, and then Dr. Bill wants to go witness this initiation. I'm going to read you here. Nick is another hangover from Tromnovel whose Natty Gale is an explicitly Jewish wandering type. Like Natty Gale, Nick is a long way from home, Seattle, and plays with anybody, anywhere. You gotta go where the work is, he tells Bill. And I believe I played that clip for you on the first two parts where we broke down the film. But again, this is Freemasonic ideas here. The Wandering Brother. Isn't that curious? Again, pointing us to the idea this is a secret society thing of the elites. Kubrick was showing it to us. Yes, indeed. And here's a fascinating connection. And maybe you've already caught this one, because we talked about Jocelyn Pook and her musical compositions. I'm going to give another take on this. Malik takes Bill over the rainbow. The store beneath his is named Under the Rainbow. During the course of the transaction, and in a scene that may have come straight out of Kafka or Nabokov's Laughter in the Dark, a film by Luis... Man, how smart are these guys writing this book? Jeez Louise. A film by Luis Buñuel, Bill meets Malik's seductive Lolita-esque daughter, played by the 14-year-old Lily Sobeski, who is cavorting with two wigged and heavily made-up Japanese men. Bill is visibly shocked, even as she clearly propositions him. What role does this scene play? In the 1969 Austrian television adaptation, it sets up the orgy. Malik's... remember, they actually... took Dream Novella and made a Austrian TV series of it. Don't ask. I don't know. Never seen it. But in the adaptation, it sets up the orgy. Malik's daughter is present at that event. In Kubrick's film, though, it is yet another unsolved mystery, another part of the dream. The music we hear is Pook's composition, Masked Ball, a reworking of her track Backwards Priest from her album Flood. And how curious is this? Because the flood comes before the rainbow. Right? Remember, that's a big part of the Bible story of Noah. The flood happens, and then the sign of God's peace towards mankind is the beautiful rainbow. Rainbow fashions actually happens before we hear the music from the flood. It's an inverted thing, right? Again, it's the inverted Gnostic take on everything. How curious is all that? Very curious. That's how curious it is. Now, again, the book doesn't mention details of the orgy. There's talk about some Freudian dream projections of Bill's. Let's read. The orgy sequence in Eyes Wide Shut is the climax of Kubrick's sexual obsessions. As we saw in the production of the sequence, the orgy presented particular problems, taking 8 weeks to shoot over three different locations. It has many precursors, Schnitzler of course, but Tromnovel prevents few details. So, the idea here, I mean, he spent a lot of time on this thing, right? But there's no details, right? So they're the writers of this book are left to wonder. And trust me, these guys, they were digging deep. Because when you read the whole book, you're like, geez Louise, how much detail do you need on a thing? But they come to the conclusion there's not enough details. So, I mean, I posit that it could be this Freudian dream projection of Bill's and his lack of being able to pull the trigger because he wants to go bang, but he just can't quite do it. The dream password is fidelity, right? Fidelio. Like, he wants so bad to be this toxic masculine bad boy, but he can't do it. He loves his wife too much. She's willing to do it. She's about that action. He's just a cuck. Oh, dear. No. Not Tom Cruise. Say it ain't so. We all know that would never happen in reality. Tom Cruise is about as toxic masculine as one could get. Oh, and this was interesting. I read this and my jaw dropped and I thought, I wonder if they read my book. All right, let's see. I'm going to read you this passage. Jan Harlan believes that the orgy was meant to represent some sort of purgatory or hell as imagined by Hieronymus Bosch. Schnitzler's blasphemous concept of depravity was already voyeurism in substance, but Stanley changed this by attempting a pornographic Hieronymus Bosch type of hell, a fantasy world for faceless voyeurs. Dijana Menelik has shown how many of the orgy's motifs indeed draw upon Bosch's in the Garden of Earthly Delights. That's a painting, I believe, right? Even in the end, Kubrick would not depict rampant sexuality unfettered and uncompromised. Indeed, that is an important meaning of Eyes Wide Shut. Sexuality is never uncomplicated. That much he learned from Sigmund Freud. Sexuality is also a box office commodity. And that became a problem for the posthumous publicity of the film, which promised that what Kubrick never intended to deliver. More to do with Hieronymus Bosch than with commonplace reality. Some conspiracists have made much of this, imagining the stealing away of the momentarily abandoned Helena, who has walked away from her clearly distracted parents. The men are probably simply extras that Kubrick used in multiple scenes, but we never see Helena again as the film soon ends after her disappearance. And as far as I know, I'm the one that, like, come up with that idea. I think so. I try to go to great lengths to cite other theorists when I get the idea from their content. And I did see this theory online recently, looking around to try to study for Eyes Wide Shut. And I thought, I think I'm the one that come up with that one. So I'm wondering if they read it in my book. I don't know. This is all just a weird flex, right? But I think it's very curious because all this stuff does happen. And even these writers, even they cited that book, Cult and the Occult, where they talk about, let me go pull it up again. Let me find that reference again for you. Where is that reference for you? The Emperor Barbarossa. Man, I can't say that word. I feel like Sam Tripoli over here. Sam always has the hard time with the words. I do too. The Emperor Barbarossa held young boys against his stomach and genitals to transfer their energy. So you don't think that Kubrick is showing you that these kids get looped up into these elite secret societies? That's what the book said that Kubrick underlined. Wake up, butthead. And then this is, we got four more notes to get through here. And then we're done. And then there's no more to say about Eyes Wide Shut. Or is there? Okay. It is hardly surprising that his very last word in his film is fuck, and not, for example, make love. For Kubrick, sexuality was part of his ironic view of human misadventure. Yet one more activity that backfires and causes pain much more than pleasure. In the Kubrick universe, sexuality is difficult, sometimes perverse, and always on the edge of destruction. So again, I mean, that was my takeaway of the film, is like, it's got these elements of sex and death. Everything's on the edge of destruction. The two worlds blur on some levels. They're all about going into another dimension. That's what the sex is about. You have the orgasm and you go into an altered state. It's like a shortcut path to a lot of these ideas that the occultists have been messing with. That's why they were so focused on the tantra sex. A film about thinking of sex in the absence of the erotic, of the crisis of masculinity, and the ascent of the feminine, while still in the person of Ziegler, under the rule of the patriarch. Again, that's my hot take of the whole movie. The duality elements of the male and the female, sex, the control systems of the secret societies, and Ziegler, the Freemason, who was trying to initiate Nick Nightingale, the wandering Freemason. We're going to wrap it up. This is the last comment from the book, and it pushes us back into the world of the Wizard of Oz. It talks about the screenwriter here. Let's see here, the script. Blah, blah, blah. In Raphael's first draft, the password to the orgy was to be Oz. Isn't that curious? So Kubrick went with Fidelio. In the book, it was Denmark. And in the first script, it was going to be Oz. Malik's daughter was called Dorothy. And one of the Japanese men is humming Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Ziegler was to be named Frank, possibly in reference to Oz's author or to Frank Morgan, who plays the wizard. The Wizard of Oz is an imaginative, conservative film that warns its viewers against being wildly imaginative. While it might have been counterintuitive in 1939 to tell audiences that there is no place like home, as opposed to going out to a movie theater, it might still have been a comfort to depression-ridden America exposed to the outbreak of war in Europe, confirming the comfort of the knowable. It is also a dream film. Because that's kind of what Wizard of Oz is, right? It's like a dream. And the same goes for E.T. There were parallels drawn that by Rob Ager that E.T. was just about a dream the whole time. I mean, E.T. says to Elliot at the end, he says, "I'll be right here." And he points to his head. It's all in his head. Now, Oz, of course, and we talked about this in the Kubrick's Code book. You know, you've got the tie to Lieber Oz, the book Crowley wrote, meaning 77. You've also got, I mean, what if Kubrick went this route? We'd be talking about Wizard of Oz. We'd be talking about L. Frank Baum, the guy who wrote Wizard of Oz. Now he followed Helena Blavatsky's Theosophy, which would put us sort of right back in the same camp, the same idea that overall this movie, Eyes Wide Shut, is very specifically and in no uncertain terms, based upon this book that dug deep into the making of the movie, it's about secret societies and elite structures. It's about occult rituals revolving around sex. It's about the sex and death cult. It's about the alchemical reconciliation of opposites, the occult concepts that Francis King's writing about. Francis King wrote a lot of occult books. And Kubrick was reading them and underlining passages. So it's all very curious to me. This is definitely one of the most mystical, strange movies. And, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, I advise you to watch it. It's very intriguing. I've seen it at least a dozen times. I don't even know, 20 times? It's kind of long. It's kind of dialogue-rich. It's kind of dry sometimes, but boy, is it good. Kubrick's masterpiece, maybe. Maybe. Maybe that's what all this is worth, doing these deep dives into, because, I mean, it took the guy like 40 years to make the thing. He put a lot of thought into it, and the making of the movie is very clear that that's what he was all about, that action. So there you go. You now know more than anyone else on the planet about Eyes Wide Shut, more than you could ever want to know. And all that because I appreciate your support. I dug deep and spent a lot of time reading these books because I wanted to give you a very comprehensive breakdown of this important film. I hope you appreciate it. I hope you liked it. I hope you loved it. I appreciate your support. You're great. Thank you. No matter which platform you're on, if you're in the Illuminati Watcher VIP section, if you're in Patreon.com, if you're on the Rockfin, wherever you're at, I appreciate you out there. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. And until next time, stay woke.